Hi there, I'm Dave McLeod, and this podcast about walks in Glennevis was made by the Nevis Partnership. The Nevis Partnership is one of the charities that look after the area around both Ben Nevis and Glennevis. This podcast series has been made to help you enjoy some of the brilliant low-level walks in Glennevis, and it's based on a booklet published by the Nevis Partnership, which you can pick up in the Glennevis Visitor Centre or order from friendsofnevis.co.uk. In this episode, I'll be walking on the lower slopes of Ben Nevis itself, but don't worry, this walk doesn't contain too much arduous hill climbing. We're going just high enough to get a lovely view of the glen and then back down to enjoy the riverbank and the forests that surround it. The walk starts off from the Glen Nevis Visitor Centre, crossing the bridge there and walking up the first part of the Ben Nevis path itself for the first kilometre or so, which rises gently across the open slopes of Maelantee. When you look at the name Maelantee on the map, to an English speaker it doesn't look much like it's pronounced. Many of the Gaelic hill names of Scotland are rather difficult to guess at their pronunciation, yet many of the names are revealing of the beauty of the Gaelic language if you know a bit more background. Fort William resident and Gaelic speaker Ron Cameron gave me more information on the Gaelic hill names of the Nevis Range and the Mamor's Ridge that you'll see on the other side of the glen.
As you go up the bend, you initially start to ascend what we call Maelantee. In Gaelic, that would be Mial an Tuí. Mial is a rounded hill. When you get a double L at the end of it, or double letter at the end of a word, it changes the vowel sound. In Gaelic, Ben Nevis is Bain Nivish, and some people think it comes from the Gaelic word nuv, meaning saint or heavenly, so it's a heavenly mountain. Others think it means another thing, venomous mountain, which seems to me quite realistic. And there's a third alternative that has something to do with a cold place. I think those who have climbed it tend to favour venomous, or those who have climbed it on a regular basis tend to go for venomous rather than heavenly. The word mam in Gaelic means a breast, and mor means big. So I think one of the theories is it just means large breasts. The first of them that you see is Mulach nan Caran. Mulach is a roof, so it's or a top, mountain top or a roof, and it's the top of the corries. Cara in Gaelic means a cauldron or a kettle, but it's also the word for a corrie. The English word corrie comes from cara, the Gaelic word. So Mulach nan Caran is the top of the corries. And then you go along that lovely level ridge that takes you to Stop Ban. That means the fair peak or the white peak. And then you continue. The next one is Scuir an Uair, the peak of the yew trees or the yew peak. And the Devil's Ridge leads you out to the north to Scuir a Bhaim. Scuir is a rocky peak, and a Bhaim means of the breast. Again, it comes from mam, but it's been changed to give the of the. So back onto the main ridge, and the next peak you come to is called Ambotach. And the way it's written, it looks like Ambodach, but the D in the middle is really a T sound, so it's Ambotach, the old man. Continuing round, you come to stop Cora Acharn, the peak of the Corrie of the Cairn. And the ridge runs out north to An Garvanach. Garav is rough in Gaelic, so An Garvanach is the rough one. And the last hill on that ridge is called An Garanach.
If you look ahead, you'll see only part of Ben Nevis filling the skyline on this side of the glen. As you walk, you'll start to get a sense of its scale as Britain's highest mountain. Although the other side of the Ben has extensive cliffs which face north towards the ski slopes on Annachmore, this side of the mountain presents a gentler whaleback aspect. On either side of the path, those of you with some geological knowledge will notice that the rocks are attractive pink and grey granites, volcanic rocks. Ben Nevis forms the centre of an unusual volcano that's of global interest. I spoke to local geologist and mountaineer Noel Williams to find out why Ben Nevis is so interesting to geologists.
There are many thousands of people walk up Ben Nevis every year, but very few of them realise that they're actually walking into an ancient caldera that 400 million years ago collapsed in a really spectacular event which blasted ash and dust to huge heights in the atmosphere. And that dust possibly traveled round the world and affected sunsets for months afterwards. When you walk up Ben Nevis, you actually cross from granite, which is red in colour. In fact, part of the path actually crosses a feature known as the Red Burn. But two corners later on the path, you cross from the granite onto a completely different rock called andesite. Now, andesite is a lava that was erupted at the surface and piled layer upon layer to form a great thickness on the Earth's crust. Granite is a completely different rock. It's formed deep down in the Earth's crust, and it cools slowly over millions of years and grows large crystals. Normally speaking, these two rocks wouldn't be close by each other, but in the case of Ben Nevis, we have this extraordinary plug of lavas caught in the middle of a huge body of granite. Now, that plug of lavas only ended up in the granite because of a spectacular collapse event which took place many millions of years ago. The magma chamber was so large that it actually started to get close to the Earth's surface, and the solid rocks above the roof of that chamber eventually failed. And when that roof collapsed, the plug of lava sank down into the molten granite. Some molten material escaped around the sides of that plug and, as I said, blasted into the air as ash and dust. But it ended up with that huge pile of lavas actually being trapped within the granite when it cooled and crystallized. So the amazing thing is that when you walk up Ben Nevis, the last third of the ascent is on a pile of lavas that at one time were 2,000 feet higher than they are today. And that's the extraordinary story about Ben Nevis, that the rocks used to be an awful lot higher, and I suspect people are quite grateful they're not when they're struggling up the tourist path.
Despite the fact that Ben Nevis is just a worn-down shadow of a much higher prehistoric mountain range, it's still the highest mountain in the British Isles, and it's 4,400 feet high. Its height means that the summit plateau of the mountain has a dramatically different climate to the lower slopes, and essentially resembles a subarctic tundra. Snow and blizzards do happen at all times of the year, and the plateau is usually covered in snow well into the summer months. The cold temperatures, together with the fact that the summit is frequently shrouded in mist and exposed to strong winds, makes it a potentially dangerous place to be. If you walk to the summit on a warm, clear summer's day, with lots of others making their way slowly up and down the path, this might seem hard to believe. But Ben Nevis is very exposed to weather systems coming across the Atlantic, and conditions can change amazingly quickly from warm and sunny to thick mist with rain or snow. Every year there's lots of rescues from the mountain, mainly of walkers getting lost in the mist near the top, exhausted or suffering slips or falls. There are frequent rescues of climbers too, mainly in winter when the covering of snow and ice on the North Face cliffs are a great temptation for ice climbers, but one that carries a risk of avalanches and falls. Mick Tai was a member of the Loch Abra Mountain Rescue Team for many years and told me about a rather daring method of plucking stranded climbers from 1,000-foot ice cliffs of the North Face.
I've been lowered down the North Face of the Ben 20 or 30 times in the last 20 or 30 years, and that's been for people who've just been stuck uninjured, people with pretty bad wounds, head wounds, fractured femurs, broken backs, all kinds of things, yeah? But the main object of the exercise is to get them off that face. And if they've been there for several hours, which they nearly always have by the time you get there, basically I get lowered down with a huge 2,000-foot long rescue rope. And I have a knot tied. I'm tied on here, I've got a knot tied just here, and I basically get lowered down to the casualty, do what very basic first aid I can do, hanging on the face in the dark, often in a blizzard, hook them into this thing here, as long as their injuries allow me to do that, and then get them off the face and then into a stretcher and then more first aid and, you know, better treatment once I get them off the face. So it's a very simplistic, almost crude system to get them off the face here.
Soon you'll arrive at the junction in the path. The Ben Nevis path carries straight on ahead, and another path comes up the slope on the right. Take the right turn and follow the stone path steeply down to the base of the glen at the youth hostel. If you'd like to keep your walk on the shorter side, you can return along the bank of the river from here to the visitor centre. But we are going to cross the bridge at the youth hostel and explore a little of the opposite side of the glen. Once over the bridge, walk back down the glen along the path by the road. You'll pass Cafe Beg and the Glen Nevis restaurant, which are both good stopping off points. Just past the restaurant, you'll turn left and walk towards the forest, passing the ancient fort of Dunjeek, which looks as if it has a moat around it. Behind some wooden houses, you'll take a track uphill, and after a few minutes you can turn right onto the forestry track. One of the most striking things about this part of the glen is the contrast between the native woodland along the riverbank and the dense forestry plantations on this part of the slopes. John Muir Trust ranger Alison Austin explained that there's a complex history behind the evolution of the different tree species through the length of the glen.
As you're walking up beside the river, you'll see a number of different tree species, alder growing next to the river, which always grows next to the river, so it quite likes its feet wet. You'll see birch higher up on the hillside, rowan, and these are patchy because there's quite a lot of grazing going on. The lower part of the glen has a long agricultural history and a history of people living on the land and growing food and having animals on the land. And when there's a lot of animals grazing, it does mean that you don't get quite as widespread tree growth as you might do in other places. However, this lower part of the glen is lovely because you have patches of open land where you'll see sheep grazing and cattle grazing in the lower glen. It is an agricultural landscape, but you also see the patches of trees and woodland where there'll be bird song, breeding birds, robins, warblers, different birds like that. When you reach Pauldhu, there's actually quite a lot more woodland around, a lot more birch and rowan and willow scrub. That's grown up over the last 20 years. I think when the area has been explored for climbing in the 80s, there was a lot less woodland. And as the grazing animals have been taken off the land, usually because of differences in agricultural subsidies, it's meant that the woodland's grown up. But when you cross the river and come back down the glen, you're looking at quite a different woodland habitat. It's non-native plantation and the land belongs to the Forestry Commission, and most of the woodland here is probably used for pulp rather than for timber. You'll see a large open patch where the woodland has been cut down, so blocks will be cut down a bit at a time. And whilst they're not native and they might not have as much of our native wildlife in them, they are brilliant for red squirrel, and they are home to quite a healthy red squirrel population, which is monitored by the Forestry Commission.
The forest road eventually brings you back down towards the visitor centre. Hopefully you'll have had a chance to spot some wildlife on the walk. Golden eagles are occasionally seen in the glen, but generally higher up near Steele. Foxes, mink and badgers all live in this part of the glen, and there are pine martens too, but you'll be really lucky to see them. There have been recent sightings of otters in the river by the visitor centre itself, so it's worth keeping your eyes peeled. In the next episode, I'll be walking the circuit of Cow Hill near the mouth of the glen and hearing about how the Great Glen was formed, as well as some of the history of Fort William and Lower Glen Nevis. If you're inspired to come and experience the walks for yourself, all the information you need and maps of the walks are in the booklet Glen Nevis Walks, produced by the Nevis Partnership, and you'll find that in the Glen Nevis Visitor Centre or from the website friendsofnevis.co.uk. While you're on the website, you might also want to consider making a donation to the charity to help them with their work in protecting Ben Nevis and Glen Nevis, such as building paths, removing litter and protecting the local wildlife. Enjoy the walks and bye for now. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can download the other episodes from friendsofnevis.co.uk or from iTunes. Those of you with Android smartphones can also download the Glen Nevis app from the Android Marketplace, which has maps and lots of other details about Glen Nevis.